potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. On today's show, I'm going to be talking about the new films Wonka, American Fiction, May-December, Saltburn, and Chicken Run, Dawn of the Nugget. I'm also going to be talking about some news, the Trailer Park and the Home Cinema Roundup featuring Ghosts, both the U.S. and the U.K. versions. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Blue Sky or Mastodon, I'm at Kevin Carr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
Let's talk about the box office really quick, because it was significant, because two of the top three movies were Japanese films, not just movies that were like a co-production with the Japanese companies. They were bona fide Japanese movies. The Boy and the Heron was Hayao Miyazaki's final film, or so he speaks. It's like 10 years ago, it was supposed to be The Wind Rises, was going to be his final film. But he did The Boy and the Heron, and it grossed $13 million, which that's enough to win this weekend's box office, but that's also way more than any of his other movies have ever made at the American box office at all. So the fact that even then he had stuff like Spirited Away and My Neighbor Totoro and all these other movies that have been beloved, Howl's Moving Castle and Ponyo, he's never made a ton of money in the States. So him having this movie make $13 million in its opening weekend, it's still making money, is a big deal. Then there was the Hunger Games movie, and we talked about that. Then in the third place was Godzilla Minus One. It's made like $8.5 million, and its total going into the week was like $25, $26 million, which again is the highest grossing Godzilla movie ever in American audiences, the ones that were made in Japan. And that's significant mainly because for as much as people talk about American perspective and mainstream, quote unquote, mainstream perspective, it shows that there is a greater diversity in film. And this has shown up in with anime in previous box office weeks. I mean, stuff like Demon Slayer did extremely well. Stuff that comes out from Crunchyroll, which is an anime distributor. Some of those movies end up topping the box office or come really close to topping the box office, do very, very well, especially because the younger generation, you're talking about Gen Z, has an affinity for anime. Even though The Boy and the Heron isn't technically anime, it is in that style. That was it. The movies that opened this weekend were pretty small. I mean, like Poor Things was in a limited run. It did extremely well in like 9 theaters. It made 250,000 dollars. But that was just weird to look at in terms of American box office. Now, the next piece of news I want to talk about is the Critics' Choice Awards. The nominations were announced this week. And if you want to watch the ceremony live on the CW, it was Sunday, January 14th in the new year, is when you can check that out. Now, this is an organization I'm part of, and I actually get a vote. And I was able to nominate, so I have a little bit closer to my heart than even something like the Oscars, certainly more than the Golden Globes. But Barbie got 18 nominations. That's incredible. And the same thing happened in the Golden Globes. Barbie got the most nominations. Oppenheimer and Poor Things both got 13 nominations. Those are making those kind of like the three front runners. I think The Holdovers is also a front runner for award season, but it's not one of those that's picking up all the like wide awards. One of the reasons Barbie got so many is it gets three for song. Because there's three different songs it's been nominated for. And that's fantastic. But I mean, if you look at the spread of what the nominations are, there aren't a ton of big surprises. There's a lot of stuff that shows up. The one that I think is a surprising one is Past Lives, which I've actually not seen. That one's picking up a bunch of nominations, not just with the Critics' Choice, but also with the Golden Globes. So that's sort of one of those dark horses to watch out for. The other thing that I have a lot of pride in, because I have to say, I nominated this movie, is Are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret. That is a great little movie. And so not only did Abby Ryder Fortson get nominated for Best Young Actress, but Kelly Freeman Craig, who adapted Judy Blume's novel, she got a nomination for Best Adapted Screenplay. But everything else is very, things you'd expect. Killers of the Flower Moon, Oppenheimer, Poor Things, a little bit of Saltburn and American Fiction love as well. Like I said, be sure to watch the Critics' Choice Awards in January when they air live on the CW on Sunday the 14th. listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. I know there's been a bunch of trailers that dropped this week. I want to kind of hit some more fringe stuff because, well, I have plenty of time in a couple weeks to talk about like stuff like Beverly Hills Cop and If and that kind of thing. But let's talk about Doctor Who. Because there's a trailer out for the Christmas special. If you don't know, Doctor Who, especially since they rebooted it back in 2005, they do a Christmas episode, not every Christmas, because there's some years they weren't in production or whatever, but they try to do that a lot. There's a lot of Christmas episodes. And so whenever there is a Doctor Who season in production, they throw in a Christmas special. And this Christmas special is the first one starring Shuti Gatwa as the 14th Doctor? I think he's a 14th Doctor. We got a taste of him in the 60th anniversary specials because they had three of them, and we talked about them a couple weeks ago. I'm a huge fan of Doctor Who, and they did this neat little throwback with David Tennant reprising his role as a 10th Doctor. They brought in Donna Noble again, played by Catherine Tate, and the first episode was really good. The second episode, to me, really evoked feelings of there's one called Midnight. It was the season where David Tennant was a doctor and Catherine Tate was his companion. But it was this little bottle episode of him on this train going to this this area that there was no life, but there was something out there kind of trying to get in. And so that second episode really reminded me of that. And then this third one is a throwback and actually draws from, I think, the first Doctor, a character that's from when the first Doctor was around back in the 60s. But I'm really interested into seeing how Shuti Gatwa plays the Doctor, because it was a little jarring because you're so grounded with Tennant and he played it for so many years and he's beloved, arguably one of the most popular modern Doctor Who's. And then you introduce another character who has to differentiate himself. And the thing with Gatwa is he is the first person of color to play Doctor Who, but he's also the first person to play Doctor who was not born in the UK. Because even though he's Scottish and Nigerian. I think he was born in Nigeria, but I mean he's essentially he's Scottish, and he has a different take to him. And I think I just have to get used to it. I always have to get used to whenever there's a new Doctor because you're so used to the other ones. And it's not like he's coming off of Jodie Whittaker. He's coming off of David Tennant, who, like I said, is one of the most beloved ones. But this is the trailer for the Christmas Day special that airs on Christmas Day on Disney Plus.
Let me sit you down and tell you a Christmas story. A story of chance, coincidence, and luck.
Who are you?
Merry Christmas.
I'm the Doctor.
What's up there?
Goblins.
Hiya.
Time travelers are great.
So I think I've already said everything I needed to say about Doctor Who, and that I'm a big fan, so I'm looking forward to this. But let's hit the next one really quick. This is called Memory. It's coming to theaters at the first weekend in January, opening wide. It's kind of doing a limited run here this week, I think. But it stars Jessica Chastain, and it's a drama.
It's amazing you didn't catch pneumonia.
Well, I haven't been sick in years.
You just got lost a minute ago.
No, I didn't get lost. Listen, I apologize if I made you feel uncomfortable the other night.
It's fine.
It's not fine.
My uncle talks about you a lot. My dad and I were maybe thinking you could care for him during the day. All you'd have to do is be there and go on walks and stuff. Why did you follow me home from the party? Or do you only remember when it's convenient?
This one, I don't know. I mean, I'll be talking about it in a couple weeks, but it's a very typical award bait movie. It's not getting really any traction anywhere. I've not seen it show up as a nomination anywhere. So that doesn't mean it's not a good movie. It's just it's not kind of catching the eye of everybody. So, you know, we'll see what happens when I get a chance to check this out in a couple weeks. Coming up next on Fat Guys at the Movies, I'm going to be talking about Saltburn and May December.
Dreaming of a white Christmas, just like the ones I used to know.
Oh,
Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's jump into the movie reviews, and I'm going to go and do some sort of award season catch-up, because there are a couple films that have already come out. They've come out limited, they come out wide, or whatever, and I just was not able to review them when they came out. Some of them, like one of them, is a Netflix movie, and Netflix can be great because they have they're very accessible. But sometimes I don't know when to cover them, when they release in limited release in theaters, or when they come out on the service, or even something like Maestro. I covered way back after it premiered at the New York Film Festival because I had a chance to see it there. I think it's out next week sometime is when Maestro comes to Netflix. But some of these have relatively short or fluctuating windows. But the first one I want to talk about is Saltburn from Amazon and MGM. A shy student at Oxford befriends a wealthy ladies' man and visits his illustrious estate and eccentric family over the summer.
My parents, they've got problems.
What kind of? What do you mean, problems?
I don't think I'll ever go home again.
Well, why don't you come home with me? Come to Saltburn.
Mr. Quick.
Wow.
And here he is now.
Oh, what beautiful eyes. Oh, how wonderful.
Yeah, I told you it wasn't a minger.
Oh, but darling, you're kind about everyone. You can't be trusted.
I think I like you even more than last year's one.
This one had so much buzz around. I kept hearing about it and hearing about it. It's directed by Emerald Fennell, who did Promising Young Woman, which was a really good movie. I thought that was fantastic. A couple of years ago, where Carey Mulligan was trying to get basically revenge for the death of a friend of hers by people who were misogynistically abusing her, we'll say. But Saltburn is her follow-up film. It stars Barry Keoghan as this sort of this soft-spoken, apparently shy and reserved student. And you might remember him. He's been in a bunch of things. He was in stuff like Killing of a Sacred Deer. But he probably made the biggest splash last year when he was in The Banshees of Inisherin. And he played the secondary character who had a relationship with Colin Farrell and his sister, but he was also conflicted and had an abusive father. I think he got an Academy Award nomination for that movie, but he's back for this one. And here's the thing. I get what this movie's doing. I heard somebody say this is one of those Eat the Rich movies. And it is, because it is harshly critical of not just the rich, but the uber wealthy, the sort of systemically wealthy, the people who are old money, who've been wealthy for years, who have estates, and they're completely out of touch. And, you know, the guy he befriends seems to be at least somebody who recognizes he's out of touch and tries to just be an average person, but he's still bathed in opulence, and he still has no concept of what real life and real struggle is. Look, I've never really interacted with the uber wealthy. I don't know if I'd want to, because there is a detachment there. You know, it's sort of like if you've ever gone with somebody shopping and somebody will be like, oh, I'll buy that. And even though it's expensive, it's $4 instead of $3. It's not a big deal. But if you're on a budget, that's jarring. And there's a lot of people who are on a budget who have to choose not to get brand name soda, for example, because it's just cheaper to do. And you can look at an average person in that situation and have that, you know, sort of disdain for them. Can you imagine if it's somebody who's like, oh, so I crashed my car, I'll just buy a new one, you know, that kind of thing. And that's kind of the way these people are. And it is an Eat the Rich movie. And in such a way, nobody's likable in the film. And that's the point of the movie. I mean, that's not a criticism. That's the point. But the problem with that is, I don't mind having a movie that you don't like any of the characters, but you have to find them interesting. I talk about that with the series It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. The characters are horrible people, but they're incredibly entertaining to watch. The problem that I had with Saltburn is I didn't care about these people. I mean, they were completely out of touch, and they were snobs, and they were unrelatable, but I also just found them to be uninteresting. I didn't find them... I didn't care. I literally, it's like one of these characters, I literally don't care if they live or die. And I know that's kind of the point. The other problem I had with this movie is it was weirdly predictable. There's parts in here where Emerald Fennell shows her hand completely. And you're just like, well, why'd you do that? Because now nothing's a surprise from this point on. And I mean, it's so obvious, and it's so jarring when she does that. That's why it looked good, and I get what they were trying to do, but I mean, it was just a bit too predictable with characters I neither liked nor found a joy in rooting against. So I'm going to have to say, for me at least, Saltburn kind of sucked.
It kind of sucks.
Wait a second. I don't like the sound of that.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about May, December. An actress visits a family for research to play the mother in a film about her notorious relationship.
It's such a pleasure to meet you.
You are so sweet. We're so happy to have you.
Thank you for doing this. It's so generous.
Well, I want you to tell the story, right, don't I? You're taller. You look taller on television, but we're basically the same size.
I'm basically the same.
Feels like things just settled down, and now y'all are making a movie.
It's a very complex and human story.
I think it's hard to trust that you're going to represent Gracie as she was.
I'm going to try.
This one's getting a lot of buzz and a lot of traction, not just for Natalie Portman and Julianne Moore, but for Charles Melton, who plays the grown-up kid. The story behind this is basically inspired by the Mary Kay Letourneau story, you know, the woman who married her or had a relationship with like a 13-year-old kid or a 12-year-old kid and got pregnant by him. And that's basically, it's a fictionalized version of that, and Natalie Portman is going to be playing this character in a movie. And Charles Melton plays, he's in his 30s now, but he was like, 11 or 12 when this affair happened. So it's based off of that. And it's a Todd Haynes movie. And Todd Haynes, I don't love his stuff. His stuff sometimes just doesn't quite click with me. Some of his movies are fine, but I mean, this one, he's trying to be clever. He's trying to be overly melodramatic. He has this soundtrack that plays like it's an intense Hitchcock film. And it really isn't. It's just this sort of kitchen sink drama. And it's about manipulation, and it's about gaslighting, and it's about abuse even. It's also about inappropriate relationships. And when do they stop being inappropriate? If you started a relationship when the person was criminally too young for you, once you're adults, is that okay? But I don't think it contemplates those questions. It's almost like, it feels to me like Todd Haynes has just created these characters and then is playing around in a sandbox with them and not quite sure what to do with it. It just seems very unfocused. And again, kind of like Saltburn, I'm like, well, kind of what's the point? Because I don't like any of the people. And I guess it's a movie about everyone who's shallow and thinks about themselves and is in their own little bubble. But if I want to see that, I can go out into the real world and see a bunch of a-holes running around. Why do I have to spend time watching a movie about it? I mean, yeah, it's good acting. Fine. Yeah. Natalie Portman's good. Julianne Moore's, I don't know, she does this weird lisp in the story. I don't know why. I guess that's a choice. It just seems strange. It's to me like that weird hillbilly accent that Rachel Zegler has in the new Hunger Games movie. It's just, I'm like, I can kind of guess why you're doing it, but it's awful. So yeah, I did not like May, December. I really didn't. I mean, there's some things I thought were, it has some funny moments in a, you know, sort of darkly humorous, but overall it's just this uneven examination of fame and manipulation has real trouble finding its focus. I'm going to say that May, December kind of sucks.
It kind of sucks.
Oh, okay. Coming up next on Fat Guys at the Movies, I'm going to be talking about Wonka and American Fiction.
And the Magnificent.
Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's continue on with the movie reviews. And this one is definitely opening this week. It is definitely a new movie. And that is Wonka. Timothée Chalamet stars as a young chocolatier, Willy Wonka, who moves to the big city to sell confections, but goes up against the chocolate cartel.
I've spent the past 7 years traveling the world perfecting my craft. You see, I'm something of a magician, inventor, and chocolate maker.
Mr. Wonka, I can see you're a man of great ingenuity.
What are you doing?
I'm making chocolate, of course. How do you like it? Dark, white, nutty, absolutely insane.
Many people have come here to sell chocolate. They've all been crushed by the chocolate cartel.
Do you have a pencil and paper?
Uh-huh.
I got an idea.
I remember when they remade Star Trek as a movie back in 2009. I had this weird up and down relationship with the movie. I'm like, oh, great, this is going to happen. Oh, I don't like that choice. Oh, this sounds good. That sounds terrible. And I kind of went up and down with the Wonka story because, first of all, do we need an origin story of Willy Wonka? That's really, it's something, it should be kind of this, it should be a mystery. There's a mystery about Willy Wonka. Yes, everything's tied to Gene Wilder. And Gene Wilder was so great as Willy Wonka in the original movie. You never knew if you could trust him. You can never knew if he was for real or not. You know, and people have talked about it. The scene where he walks out and he looks old and decrepit and he falls down and rolls and stands back up, that shows from the moment you see Willy Wonka, you can't 100% trust what's going on with him. And they took that character, which was very much in the spirit of Roald Dahl, because as whimsical and fun and as goofy and as quirky as Roald Dahl was, he always had a dark side to him, always had a level of questionable darkness in him. And that came through with the Willy Wonka character. Then they, of course, you know, they have the rights to it. And, you know, they did the remake about 20 years ago with Johnny Depp and Tim Burton. And I thought that one was okay. Weirdly enough, it was closer to the book, I think. But the idea of making this Wonka movie just didn't seem to work. And also, when it comes to Timothée Chalamet, I am not what you describe as a Chalamaniac. I don't think he's that good. He's not as good. Well, let me just put it this way. He's fine. He's a good actor. But he is not as good as everybody says he is. There are very few roles I've seen him in that he genuinely convinces me he embodies that role. Like, literally, I think the best acting performance he ever did was in Don't Look Up. I love fingerling potatoes. I mean, that's, to me, him actually branching outside of his standard character. Call Me By Your Name? Pfft, I didn't care about him in that. Beautiful Boy? You know? Dune? Oh, my God. I like Kyle MacLachlan as Paul Atreides so much better. He's fine in this movie. Does he live up to Gene Wilder? No. He doesn't even really live up to Johnny Depp, but he's fine. He is passable in this movie. But the thing is, when you're making a movie like this, it has to be more than passable. But what saves it is Paul King. Paul King is the director, and if you don't know his name, you should at least know his movies. He did Paddington and Paddington 2. Two of the most charming, wonderful movies you're ever going to see. I adore the Paddington movies, and a lot of people adore them as well. And what Paul King did is he took the darker elements of Roald Dahl and put some charm into them. And there's still like these weird dark elements, like the fact that there's a chocolate cartel, that there's a almost crime boss syndicate of people selling chocolate is so absurd, but it fits well with Paddington. And yeah, we're not talking about orange marmalade. But it really has that optimism and that charm and that warm and cozy feeling. I don't know how else to say it. And even though it takes place in a very different world than the Paddington universe, it really feels like it kind of is cut from the same cloth. It is such a wonderfully sweet little movie. And like I said, Chalamet's fine. He completely works in the role. But I think part of what makes him work in the role is he doesn't try to just ape the Gene Wilder version or the Johnny Depp version. He does his own version. But really, honestly, you know, if they would have had Paddington Bear star as Willy Wonka, that would have been a work of genius. To me, that's a billion-dollar film right there. But still, this is very sweet. It's a neat little movie. It's got a great cast. It's got a great group of characters in there. The good guys and the bad guys, it's even outside of a written Roald Dahl piece, it has that Roald Dahl feeling, although it's much more optimistic. It's sort of like Roald Dahl told through Paddington spectacles, we'll say. But it works. I mean, it has more charm than it should, and it features a sweet, uplifting story. I'm going to say that Wonka rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent!
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. The next movie I want to talk about is American Fiction. An academic writer pens a sensational story as a joke and must fulfill the promotion of a book when it becomes a phenomenon.
Monk, your books are good, but they're not popular.
Editors, they want a black book.
They have a black book. I'm black,
and it's my book.
You know what I mean.
Look at what they published. Look at what they expect us to write. I just want to rub their noses in it.
Deadbeat dads, rappers, crack. You said you wanted black stuff. That's black, right?
I see what you're doing.
We sold your book.
No.
It's a joke.
The most lucrative joke you've ever told.
This stars Jeffrey Wright. Now, not everybody knows his name, but you'd recognize him because he's been in a billion things. He played Felix Leiter in the Daniel Craig James Bond movies. He's a black guy. Because this, and the reason I point that out, otherwise it's irrelevant. But the reason I point that out is this is about racial politics and race relations. So it's important to know that he's a black guy in this. But he's been in a ton of things, and he never gets the recognition that he deserves because he is a brilliant actor. And in this movie, he basically plays this stuffed shirt academic who comes from a wealthy family of doctors and they like got a beach house and all this kind of stuff. So he does not come from the ghetto. He comes from a way more privileged family than I did. And I don't have a privileged family, but you know, as a black writer, he sometimes has trouble getting his stuff read or published even because they want something that's the black experience and they want the African-American novel. And he's like, I am African-American. I'm a black American. So whatever I write is going to be African-American fiction. But no, they want something that shows the hard, almost stereotyped version of that. And he struggles with that because he doesn't want to write that, but that's what sells. And as he just writes this book as a joke, as just like, oh, I'll stick it to him and I'll still do this. And it was originally called My Pathology with an F, pathology mispronounced. And then it takes off and he has to like follow up on it. And that's the best part about it is him trying to deal with this. And of course it, you know, it brings in some money. And at that point, then he's stuck. He can't tell anybody it's fake. It really has this great deconstruction of not just American literature, but how American literature is marketed and received. And it turns out to be one of these Oprah book club type books where everyone has to read it because it shows the true American experience, even though it's all hogwash. It's just he makes it up. And I remember my mother was in a book club once, and she'd come and tell me the books that she read, and they're like well-known stuff like Angela's Ashes. And I don't question that they are good books, but I remember my dad and I would say, like, read Harry Potter. And she's like, no, that's not the right kind. And they would describe it as saying it'd have to be a significant book. And that's what it is when really this stuff is very easy to mimic. I mean, there are certain stereotypes. There's reasons for stereotypes for everybody. I mean, I'm Irish. There's a reason that drinking is a stereotype, but not everybody falls in that stereotype. And it just shows the sort of ignorant view that people have. And then when people are chasing that ignorance for money, it becomes even more absurd. Now the movie's not perfect. It has a lot, it has some distractions. There's a lot in there because it's based on a book itself. So there it's juggling a lot of different ideas and concepts, but it's bitingly funny and sarcastic. This deconstruction of American pop culture tastes challenge our views of quality work. I'm going to say American fiction totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent.
Coming up next on Fat Guys at the Movies, I'm going to be talking about Chicken Run, Dawn of the Nugget, and the Home Cinema Roundup featuring ghosts.
You're a mean one, Mr. Grinch.
Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's wrap things up in terms of the movie reviews and talk about one that's right on Netflix, Chicken Run, Dawn of the Nugget. Years after their escape from the farm, Ginger and Rocky have to save their daughter who gets caught up in a dangerous new chicken company.
Life doesn't get better than this. We've put the past behind us. We have Molly to think about now.
You've got everything you want right here.
You can't make me stay here.
She's left the island.
The truck's taking chickens to some kind of farm.
There's something strange about this place.
Last time we broke out of a chicken farm. Well, this time, we're breaking in.
I've seen Chicken Run. I saw Chicken Run a while back. When it came out, it was a phenomenon. It did extremely well. I didn't see it when it came out. I was like in my early 20s, mid-20s, or I had just gotten married around that. I forget when it came out. I was not going to see animated movies at the time because I wasn't covering them as a film critic, and I had gotten grown up. And when you're in your 20s, you're always like, oh, I don't want to go see that. That's a kid's movie. You know what I mean? Because you're stupid when you're younger. So I didn't get to see it until way later on either VHS or DVD. And I liked it. I thought it was fine, but I didn't love it. And since Chicken Run has come out, I've become a big fan of Wallace and Gromit, Shaun the Sheep. I'm a huge Aardman fan now. I've loved most of their movies that they've made. And so I was excited to go back and watch this one because and I kind of remember Chicken Run. This definitely has the Aardman charm to it. But, you know, it's clear that they're pulling from a movie that's a couple decades old. Not to mention the fact that they had to get rid of Mel Gibson. Because he went and was doing sort of like Kanye-level stuff in terms of some statements he's made. So they got Zachary Levi for some reason. I mean, not like he hasn't started making some controversial statements and stuff like that. So it's like, well, they may have just swapped one for the other. And when they do another Chicken Run sequel in 5 or 10 years, they'll have to get another actor to play the role. But so you don't have Mel Gibson in this one, but you got a lot of the people back doing the same voices because they're voices. But it's very typical Aardman, that dry British level of, at times, you know, very, you know, there's something about British delivery of things that people act almost austere, even if it's not a true thing. You know, it's like you might just be a ditch digger, but you talk in a posh accent or something like that. Or you have this level of respect and authority. I'm not going to try and do a British accent there or anything like that. That's the closest I will come to it. As much as I love British programming, I can't do a really good one there, governor. See, that's just what it turns into. It turns into, you know, Ryan Reynolds doing Christmas Carol or something like that. Anyways, you know, this fits with that Aardman charm. It really is. It's a sweet little movie. You've got Bella Ramsey playing the daughter, and her personality, she's that sort of the spitfire personality, that little, I'm going to tell you what it is. She's kind of sassy and everything. And that comes through with her voice. And she's got one heck of a career with stuff like The Last of Us and other movies where, like, what was that? Catherine Called Birdie or something like that. That was a sweet little story. And I think she's a great little actress. I like her. So she does a good job. And this also manages to show the terror of a chicken farm from the chicken's point of view. And I can still go and get Popeye's chicken down the road and enjoy it like crazy when I come home. So, I mean, I don't feel too guilty about eating the chickens because chickens, I mean, they're way more anthropomorphized in this movie than they really are. So, I mean, I will eat a bucket of chicken and watch a Chicken Run movie, and I have no guilt whatsoever. But this is charming and sweet and cute. I really did enjoy it. I you know, it's full of offbeat Aardman charm, and this family adventure is a lot of fun. If you like that whimsical fun and silly and British dry animation, it's quite good. It totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the home cinema roundup. Today I'm going to be talking about the series Ghosts, which is in the US and the UK, and it's essentially the same premise. But I've seen both of them, and I kind of want to talk about it because it's kind of a big show, and it's going to be coming back. The American version is going to be coming back in, I think, February. After suffering a blow to the head, a woman is able to see all the ghosts that haunt the bed and breakfast she runs with her husband.
There are a limited number of buyers for property this size, right? So you have your bed and breakfast operators.
What if we opened a bed and breakfast?
Okay, this is huge.
And it's all ours.
Wow.
New York is full of people. We're never alone.
This must be the new folks that own the house.
We are ghosts. While most spirits pass on to the afterlife.
Oh, good for her.
Dwell on.
It's the summer of 98, Tara Reid's birthday.
Who is Tara Reid?
God, I hate being the most recently dead.
Now, it originally started as a British show, and I've seen the British show. And the girl who plays the main lead, I have a real thing for her. I like her. She's not your typical, you know, like model, but I've always liked her as an actress. But the British version is more dry, and it's a little like darker and a little more depressing at times. The ghosts aren't as charming, because the basic what they do is they have all these ghosts that have died throughout the years, and they stay on the property, but they have to change it for the American versus the British one. Like in the British one, they have essentially an old Celtic, you know, caveman basically, and so he's there, and they've got some like people from the Gilded Age, and you know, sort of like that 17th century life in there, and then they have like a guy from World War II. He's a general, and they have a politician, and he are a ghost how you died, and so he doesn't have any pants because he was having sex at the time. In the American version, they have like a Viking who had come over, and then they have a member of the Lenni Lenape tribe, because that takes place in upstate New York, and they've got. They've got a guy who's basically a Boy Scout instructor, and they have like a frat bro, and he's the one who died without pants. And they have, so the characters aren't exactly a one-to-one comparison, but I actually think the ghosts are better developed in the American version. The British ones, they're kind of like these one-note jokes. And part of the reason is that British shows have like 6 episodes per season. And so they've done, I don't know, like 4 seasons. So that's like one season of television in American TV, because, you know, a season of television in America is like, on a normal one would be, a network would be 20 to 26 episodes. It just depends. But a British show is like 6. So what takes them a year in America takes them 4 years in Britain. And so you don't get the full development, because you have to get through that 6 episode run, and you got to have kind of an arc for the season. So I think I actually like the American version a little bit better, because I think that the ghosts are a little more charming. The ghosts are more developed, and because some of the characters in the British version, they're kind of like a one-note joke. Like there's one guy who was shot during a duel, and he's in love with the girl or the woman who runs the bed and breakfast. But that's like it. You don't really have any sort of development. And they found a way in the American one to actually develop these characters. Even the Viking. The Viking has a son who's on a different property nearby, and they yell at each other because they're bound by the confines of the property. And there's like a jazz singer like during the Prohibition era in the American version. And she was murdered. And so they have this whole series where they're trying to solve her murder. And they're better written characters. The Livings... The two people who live there, the husband and wife, they're well developed on both. But in the British version, they haven't really developed the ghost. They have a couple of the characters, the ghost characters are there. But also some of them are a little bit, you know, I don't know. There's like a snottiness and a meanness to some of the more, let's just say, privileged ghosts on the property. Still, it's fun. Now, the BBC version used to be on Max. I think they moved it over to Paramount because during the writer's strike and the actor strike, because they needed stuff to air on TV, they brought the BBC version of Ghost to America, and they started airing that in the time slot that Ghost would normally air. But it's coming back. The American version's coming back in February. So, I mean, I'm not going to watch it then. I've been watching that on Paramount Plus. But they've got basically 2 seasons, I think, they've already had. The first season was short, and then the second season was a full 20-some episodes. So I'm going to say, you know, it's a well-balanced sitcom that doesn't belabor its premise, but rather mines plenty of laughs from its bizarre cast of characters. A little more in the U.S. than the British version, but still, they're both entertaining. They both totally rock.
It rocks.
Excellent!
And that's it for this week. I need to go. Next week, I'm going to be talking about The Color Purple, Ferrari, All of Us Strangers, and The Boys in the Boat. Until then, have a fat time at the movies or at home.